Hello and welcome. This is Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney. Coming up on today's programme.
It's revolutionised everything. It's revolutionised society. It's how we communicate. It's how we collaborate. It's how we learn. If I didn't have the internet, I probably couldn't survive more than a few days. It's probably that much part of my life.
I'll be talking to Simon Lewis, a primary school principal who uses technology extensively in his own school and who manages two websites that provide services to other teachers. He also tweets about education daily. But first, as always, we take a look at this week's education news with Barry Hennessy. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello, Sean.
Barry, a change in minister and a change in name for the former Department of Education and Science in the past week.
Well, indeed, after over 8 months of talking about the Department of Education and Science on this programme, we now have to quickly get used to the Department of Education and Skills and to its new incumbent, the Taoiseach Mary Coughlan. Minister Coughlan is no stranger to education, having spent 13 years as a member of Donegal VEC and been chairperson of a school board of management in Donegal Town. She was also a Fianna Fáil opposition spokesperson on educational reform in the mid-1990s. Exactly 1 month ago on this programme, we heard from the Teachers Union of Ireland about their renewed call for Department of Education and Training. Needless to say, the TUI was quickly out of the traps last Tuesday to welcome the government's decision to rename the Department of Education, predictably calling for increased funding for Institutes of Technology and PLC courses in the same breath. There was a similar welcome for the new department from the Irish Vocational Education Association, which claimed the credit for calling for a Department of Education and Skills at its Congress last September. The Union of Students in Ireland, ahead of its annual Congress this week, called on Minister Coughlan to bring the stalled Student Support Bill before the Oireachtas as a matter of urgency. The bill has been resting on a Marlborough Street shelf since being published 2 years ago. The most lukewarm reaction to Minister Coughlan's appointment as Education and Skills Minister came from the largest second-level union, the ASTI, who've confirmed that they'll be standing by their decision not to invite the Minister to their annual convention in Galway next month. Inside Education has invited Mary Coughlan to come on this programme to discuss her plans for her tenure in the shoes of Donna O'Malley, Gemma Hussey or indeed Niamh Ranagh. We've been promised a reply in due course. In the meantime, I've been speaking to Fine Gael's education spokesman Brian Hayes about the priorities now facing the Taoiseach.
The key priorities are trying to deal with the problem of an ever-increasing number of people coming into our education system. This September we'll have 500,000 young people in primary schools, the first time that's been reached since 1886. We have 1 in 4 of the entire population in some shape or form is in full-time education in this country. And education, if you like, is the perfect storm at the moment at the one level. It's effectively seen a reduction in its core grant, while at another level we see increases in the number of people who require education. So it's a very difficult time for education, difficult time for the country. But the only way we're going to come through this recession is to continue to invest in education, and that means all levels of education, but particularly a primary level where effectively the funding is so small by comparison to other EU countries. We don't spend enough, we get it on the cheap, and we can see that in the rising number of classes where you've over 30 kids or more.
Where is the money supposed to come from to put further increased funding into the system?
Well, the only party that's proposed a radical approach to funding higher level education, which means effectively more money for everyone else if we can find a new revenue stream at third level, is Fine Gael and myself. I'm the only politician at all who's actually set out a means of doing that. So that's a key priority for our party, trying to refocus higher education by getting a new revenue stream into it, and that requires student contribution. I've said that from day one. I stand over it. I think if people choose to go to college, they should pay a little bit more through their taxation system. I make no apologies for that, on the basis that only 66% of the age cohort go on to higher level education, where 100% of people do primary schools. So that's where the funding needs to come from.
Now, one of the other big issues in primary education at the moment, and some would say almost the bigger issue, is the issue of school patronage. What's your view as regards the way forward in looking at the bodies that should be involved in owning and managing our primary schools?
Well, we've too many Catholic schools. I said that in a speech I gave last week in Killarney. 92% of all our primary schools are Catholic schools, but they're Catholic with a small c rather than a large c. They're effectively the local national school. They're not some kind of fundamentalist religious schools in which only Catholics attend. But I think the Catholic bishops have accepted that there are too many Catholic schools. What we need is diversity, choice. We need a variety of providers, as we've seen in recent years. And I have said as the first start in that what we need is a forum on patronage where parents will be given an opportunity to express their views. The one group of people who have been excluded from the debate so far are parents. And while this is an issue of importance, it's not the fundamental issue that parents bring up with me as I go around the country. It's more an issue of teacher quality, principal quality, leadership in our schools, whether or not there's resources there for children who might be falling behind in one subject or the next. That's the issue more so than the model of patronage that we see in our schools.
Right, well, since you've mentioned the quality of teaching and learning, let's move on to an issue that I know is more of an issue at post-primary, and that's the current industrial relations situation.
Yes.
Obviously, the moratorium on posts of responsibility in post-primary is a massive issue. What would you suggest to Minister Coughlin should be done to try to break the logjam there?
Well, I've already made a suggestion to the former minister, Minister O'Keefe, and he's taking this suggestion up, at least when he was minister, he was, that you would set him a minimum floor upon which the number of appointments would not fall under that. In other words, given the number of retirements in one school or another, middle management posts go by the side, of course, they're not being replaced. So I've suggested that a minimum floor would be set in each school so that if you go, if you're close to that floor, the state would then, through the Department of Education and Science, allow you to make additional appointments. I think that's the way forward, really, if we're seriously trying to get to a situation where all these posts are being lost.
Let me ask you one final question. It concerns the largest second-level teaching union, the ASTI, which has today said that it will not be reviewing its decision not to invite Mary Coughlin to its annual convention. Given that you would wish to be sitting at that desk in Marlborough Street in the future, do you think the ASTI should actually reconsider and extend some form of a conciliatory hand to the new minister?
That's a matter for them. The fact that they choose not to invite her is a matter for them. I suppose, for her perspective, it's one less conference to attend. That's not the worst outcome in the world, I suspect, because I myself have to go to all the teacher conferences next week. So I'll be at all three of them. So the fact that she's only two of the three, maybe she's fortunate.
Brian Hayes, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And that was Fine Gael spokesman on education, Brian Hayes, speaking to Barry Hennessy. And Barry Hennessy will be back at the same time next week with more education news. And we look forward to speaking to Minister Coughlin on this programme when she settles into her new position. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. You can get in touch with the programme by texting 086 8962 665 or you can email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from www.insideed.com or from iTunes. We now move on to the topic of technology in our schools, and my guest today is Simon Lewis, the first and current principal of Carlow Educate Together School, a new primary school which opened in September 2008. Simon is a computer science graduate who entered teaching by accident after the dot-com bubble burst back in 2001 and there was a shortage of teachers. He did his teacher training in the United Kingdom. I met up with Simon in the Educate Together school in Carlow Town and he began by bringing me on a tour of the school. On our walk around the school, I saw a piece of technology that I had never seen before, a visualizer. I began the interview by asking Simon to tell me about it.
A visualizer, I suppose the best way to describe it is kind of a modern overhead projector, in that it's essentially a camera on a stick, and if you put something underneath the camera, it will project it onto a screen using your existing projector. And that's essentially all it is. Now, it has some educational uses, such as maybe showing small objects that children bring in, or you could even use it to show certain children's work or a piece of art on a big screen. So I'm toying around with it at the minute, trying to find different uses for it, but it is gaining in popularity, all right.
And that teacher also uses video conferencing with the children in her class. Could you say a little bit about what that project involves?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been actually very lucky that a company have given me free access to their video conferencing software, which is actually all based online. And he's given me free rein to kind of do video conferences with any school that's interested. And at the moment, two of our classes are video conferencing at the moment. Emer, who's a teacher with the visualizer, she's video conferencing with the school in Limerick, and they're doing a project at the moment with a group of second class students in Limerick City, and they're comparing rural and city life over a period of 6 to 8 weeks. And the other class who are actually using video conferencing are doing a big project, a dance project, where in 3 weeks' time they'll be performing a dance to each other using video conferencing. So it's amazing how it breaks down boundaries of classrooms, all right.
And outside of the classroom use of technology, you also have a very active school website.
Yeah, I see technology as a way of communicating outside of the four walls of any place, and it's the easiest way of doing it. So we try, I mean, one thing that we do as a staff is we have a set target that we'd at least post one thing up per month on our class, on our school website, so that as we grow, it's going to be a very, very active website. So right now, it changes at least once a week, and it's a good way for parents and the wider community to kind of see what goes on within our walls.
And you also had a nice innovation where inside the school door you have an actual notice board, but you're able to apply technology to that for the benefit of parents as well.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was a bit of a fun thing, all right. Every time we have a little notice board in our foyer of the school, and often parents can't come into the building to see it. So what I do is every time we change it, I have a camera phone, and I take a photograph of the notice board, and the phone I have will automatically publish it to a blog. And so a parent can actually log onto the website, click on check notice board, it opens up the blog, and the latest notice board is shown there. Simple use of technology, but I think it works very well for a lot of parents. I get good feedback on it.
So obviously teachers in the school are expected to engage with technology in their teaching. How, as principal, do you go about influencing teachers to incorporate the best uses of technology in their teaching?
I suppose it's a two-way thing. I in a way that when we are, we're lucky, we're kind of, I suppose, a new school. So when we are looking for candidates, it is one of the criteria is attitude towards technology, and we do ask about it. But even so, even in other schools where I've worked before, where there's been a staff where teachers wouldn't be so technologically advanced or used to technology at all, it's about giving them a starting point to what they're comfortable with. And the one thing I found through the years that is the starting point for any teacher is actually the interactive whiteboard. I can guess that the reason for that is because it's quite similar to a blackboard or a whiteboard, which they'd be used to using. So it's not a major step from using a whiteboard to using an interactive whiteboard. They're quite similar in their functionality. And from that, then you can kind of ease in other bits and pieces, such as, you know, updating websites or creating blogs or even using any other bit of technology.
But couldn't that be one of the dangers, Simon? The fact that the interactive whiteboard is so close to the traditional blackboard or whiteboard, that people might just use them in the way that they use the old technology and not really take advantage of what can be done with the newer technologies.
And you're right, initially that is exactly what happens, and I still think that's probably better than not using technology at all. I think once a teacher gains their comfort zone in it, it's my job then, I guess, to influence them and give give training within the staff to other ways. I mean, for example, one of the teachers who's doing the video conferencing had never done that before, but because it was just that little step extra out, she was used to using the interactive whiteboard, but now she's using the interactive whiteboard as a video conferencing tool. So she's already, you know, nearly by accident using it in a more effective way, but without feeling bad about it or feeling pressurized.
One of the constraints of using technology in schools is teachers often say, if something goes wrong, if the technology breaks down, what do I do? Or, you know, will it just be lying there for weeks on end with no one to fix it? How do you deal with those kind of issues?
Yeah, it's a major, major, major problem, I think, generally in Irish primary schools, at least. In that we're very, very focused on hardware. I mean, for example, the grant that we received recently was totally focused on hardware.
This was the grant from the NCTE?
Yes, from the NCTE. And I think it's so important for schools to have to try and think about getting a sort of a contract with a company for technical support somehow. It's very hard in this day and age because we've had to survive really as schools for the last 10, 15 years because there hasn't really been any kind of plan or way of getting any technical support. So right now it's just difficult. If something breaks in our school, essentially, I have to fix it, and that takes weeks until we actually come up with some sort of structure where technical support is available in schools. And I think that should be high in the priority list for the government, really.
One thing you've also got in this school, Simon, is a very high-powered server. Can you say a little bit about how you went about getting it and what the plans are for the future of that?
Okay. Yeah, the reason we got the server was actually linked to the technical support end of things. My plan really was to get a very, very, very good server that would run every single computer in the school. So no matter how old the computer itself was, we wouldn't actually have to replace it ever again because it's always running off the server. So we could be having computers that are 10, 15 years old working like brand new computers because when you turn it on, it logs in through the server. Now, the advantages for us in that is that we don't have to buy hardware very often. So if it breaks, we just recycle it and replace it with some other old bit of hardware, so we can get donated stuff quite quickly. The other thing is, if something goes wrong as well, we only have to fix one computer, and that's the server. And that's, I think, that's going to be a major part of our technical support plan whenever we get one sorted out.
And for any techies who are listening, Simon, what is the spec of this server?
For techies, I and although I have an IT background, I actually don't understand the specs very well myself. I know it has 8 gigabytes of RAM, which is quite big, and I also know it has 8 half-gigabyte hard drives. So there's 4 terabytes of space for things to happen. After that, it was all initials and abbreviations, which I didn't understand.
And we're probably losing people anyway as we're speaking. Simon, the way I became aware of your work initially was through your tweets and also through your website, unsho.net, which is kind of your technology work outside the school. I wonder, can you start off by just saying a little bit about what unsho.net is?
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, unsho.net's been around for about 4 years, and it started life off as a kind of a way for teachers to share resources. So people would put up things they'd created or links they liked, and that was the original plan of it. And to be honest, nobody used it. So I changed tact again and tried to make it into a social networking site for teachers. Again, that didn't work, and it became then just me giving out and giving opinions on things. We would be reviewing a lot of books and a lot of schemes for various companies, but what really brought it out there into the open was the fact that because interactive whiteboards took off so in such a big way, I ended up reviewing every board that was out there came up with an interactive whiteboard review back in June 2008, and it really took off from there. I mean, I think there were maybe 2 or 3 visitors per day before then, and now I have about 750,000 people a year visiting the website, and I would blame it solely on the fact that I had such a big influence on interactive whiteboard technology there.
And there are also PowerPoints there that teachers can use.
Yeah, I mean, people often send me PowerPoints or printables, and I put them up, and I've no problem with that. Although, what I also do is, because there is another website called shomaronga.ie, which is run by another Irish teacher, I tend to send them on to him as well because that's his thing. I'm more of an opinion website, more of a magazine of all things education and technology, I prefer it to be that way. I put them up, but I prefer to kind of give it to somebody else who specializes in that.
Okay, so your focus is on the review articles then?
Pretty much. When I give opinions, I tend to give I mean, recently the topic of cloud computing has kind of taken over a lot of my work, and I write extensively on that. I also write about about the whole smart schools initiative, and I generally, it's my opinion. I mean, I don't know everything, but I do have an opinion. I've generally strong opinions on stuff, and I just write about it, and it's great that people are reading it, and some people are taking it seriously. Some people disagree with me, and that's great too. I find it a lot of it creates great discussion, and it's getting IT out there in education. That's what it's all about for me.
And your latest project is called Mash.ie. Now, I'm not at all familiar with this. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, Mash is my latest venture. I might add, I get nothing out of doing any of these websites. Financially, I do this as a passion, I suppose. I've always been in favour of, when I'm doing my planning, I like thematic planning at primary level. I do like when I'm planning my own subjects in school, I like to pick a theme and go with it in all sorts of different subjects. And I was kind of thinking, wouldn't it be great if there was a website with tons of themes, which teachers could just log on and pick a theme, and there'd be a load of web links and lesson plans for them to do, and it would ease their planning. And that's kind of how it works, so that anyone who's a member of MASH can upload a link or a lesson plan or a picture, a video that would suit a theme. And essentially what it does, it's teachers collaborating, and again, we're as a as a country, we're quite autonomous in our classrooms. We tend to keep what we have and not share it. And I think that culture is changing. And I just see MASH as a way of utilising this collaborative nature of teachers, where we can actually share our knowledge and what we've done in class. And so far, it's working quite well.
So supposing I was planning to teach a unit then next week about Australia, I could presumably go into MASH.ie and find some material on that topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, there is something on Australia. If you went, you can search for it, or you can go to the list, click on Australia, and underneath there will be a slight description of how you would teach Australia, and then underneath are a number of links. Now, the teacher who visits that can go to all the links, and if they like a link, they can rate it, they can give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and the idea is the best links will rise to the top, so that over time, if you're a teacher, as time goes on, the best links will be at the top of the list. Links that aren't so good will be down the bottom or just completely gone altogether.
So that's like a kind of a quality control system.
Exactly. Teachers control the quality. It won't be up to me to do that. As well as that, if you do your theme on Australia and you actually find a website, a different website that isn't on that list, you can add it to the MASH, as that's hence the name, MASH.ie. So that's the theme of it.
And that is probably going to be as successful as the number of teachers that you can actually get to participate in the scheme. How are you getting teachers to log on to it, and what kind of success have you had with it so far?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This will only work if teachers use it and add to it. And I'm very, very lucky that there's so many great Irish teachers out there that are willing to give up their time for nothing, really. They're just being nice. And I have 182 members today who have at least added one thing to the website. Two particular users who I've never met, I don't know who they are, have added 200 links between them already within, the website launched maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, which is amazing. And the way I got through to them is, to be honest, through educational fora, through mailing lists, and even through Twitter as well.
Simon, you've said that you don't get any money out of all this. You do it because of passion. How much time do you have to spend on all of these different initiatives, both in school and outside of school, on technology?
My wife would say too much, and probably my family would say too much. I couldn't quantify it. It depends on the week. I mean, a lot of the time, I suppose maybe 3 to 4 hours a week, I guess I don't really watch TV that much, so this is my hobby.
And how do you keep up to date with developments in technology and education? Because obviously, even say, as I saw things like the visualizer there, things that are new, how do you keep up to date with them?
I try to go to as many educational conferences I possibly can. I'd be a firm supporter of organisations like the Computer Education Society of Ireland. I go to their conference every year without fail, and there's always something new to be learned there. I mean, even it was on a few weeks ago, and even then I picked up a few new things. There's stuff going on all the time. I mean, Twitter actually would be another thing that actually helps me a lot. There's people I follow who will put up a link to a website, and I'll look at it and go, wow, this would really work in an educational context. I mean, small things, even like Wordle, which is a website which allows you to make word pictures, word clouds. And there's people who are out there giving that educational value. And I essentially, I'm stealing ideas all the time and trying to give them out to other Irish teachers.
And have you used Wordles in your schools? This is where you put in text into a web page, and it gives you a picture where the words are in proportion to the recurrence in the text.
Yeah, I've used it a few times, and we use it for different kind of things. I mean, I suppose I'm not 100% sure of its hype in education. It's good for certain things. A nice little thing I used it for was when a senior class in the school were maybe writing a story, and we were looking for kind of tired words, like, you know, the way children would say, you know, he said, then she said. So we'd paste in their little story, and then you just see in giant writing the word then and the word said, and the kids go, okay, I'm using that a bit too much, and they can change it from there. So that's one nice use. There's a few other little bits and pieces that we kind of use it for, but that was the one I liked the most.
And Simon, you obviously think a lot about technology and education. How do you think schools will be different in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, in terms of their use of technology?
I think it's very dependent on what people outside of my control do, and that's obviously the guys at the top in government. I would hope that, I mean, obviously cloud computing is the buzzword at the minute, and I can see that becoming a big thing. But
can you say just a bit more about what that is?
Yeah, I mean, cloud computing is just, I mean, it's a buzzword, but I think people have been doing it for years anyway. Essentially, it's just whatever, it's basically saving your computer information onto a computer somewhere else in the world. For example, if I'm on the internet and I am using and I'm on Google and I'm writing a document in Google, I save it, but it's not saved on my computer. It's saved in a computer somewhere in America, and I have no idea where it is. But it doesn't really matter because there's so much other stuff there that it's very secure just by volume. So that's all cloud computing is. And the advantage of that to someone like me is that if I want to access it somewhere, I don't have to be on the same computer as I was in the first place. So I can access any document I want, you know, wherever I have an internet connection. That's kind of really how I use cloud computing. I can see that being ubiquitous anyway, generally in Ireland. I don't know, and I can see coming into education in the next couple of years. I suppose the challenge to the government for me would be to have some sort of structure to how schools use IT. I really think a centralized technical support strategy would be very, very important, with remote sort of help that schools would be able to run on a network that could be accessed by someone in an education center. So if something went wrong, it could be sorted out from a central point or a regional point. I can see that being very, very useful. But we're so, so far behind. I mean, that's the next step. I mean, there's so much we can be doing, but I don't think we'll get it done until there's a real structure. And what's going on right now, I don't think is right.
And in what sense, Simon?
I see, again, too much focus on hardware and getting the latest and greatest bits of hardware into a school. And I don't think that's the way forward. I really think getting a centralized system in every school such that you're not having to buy lots of computers. Your main investment would be in support rather than hardware. I think we're spending, you know, probably 80 to 90% of our costs on hardware, where it should be somewhere down to 10, 20% and maybe 50% on support, and the rest on, let's say, software or services.
Some food for thought there for those planning technology policy for our schools from Simon Lewis, Principal of Carlow Educate Together National School. That's it for this week. To download podcasts of previous programmes, the website is www.insideed.com, or you can also download programmes on iTunes. Thanks to Barry Hennessy for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening, and please stand by for Ali and Emmett with Up and Down, the Urban Music Show.